It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 94 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and I'm joined once again by the delightful Jamie Trezellian. How are you doing, brother? Good to see you.
Man, I am amazing. Happy to be back. Happy to be chatting some fights with you, mate.
Good, good. And you've just relocated once again, the filthy digital nomad that you are, so I'll actually be seeing you in person very soon.
That's it. I'm back in the BP. When we're together, we'll have to have a drink, watch some fights. DP in the BP, baby. Whoop, 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 whoop.
Absolutely. I think we've got scheduled in to watch UFC 294 together, which is just going to be absolutely delicious. Banger. It's going to be an absolutely fantastic card. And of course, we'll be bringing you a full preview episode in the run up to that. Not long to go, just a couple of weeks now until we head back to Abu Dhabi. And
so keen,
crazy stuff happens between Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira. Very, very excited for that. Before we do that, we've got some other bits and pieces to talk about. You know, the UFC gets a lot of hate. And it gets a lot of hate in terms of the quality, I guess, of the fight cards that they're putting out, and because of the number, right? And it just makes common sense that if you put out the number of cards, the quality is going to dilute. But you can almost be sure that on every single card, there's going to be at least a couple of fights that get your nuts tickling just a little bit. And this card was no different. There was a few names on there. Overall, it was a 5 out of 10 card, but there was a few finishes, there's a few talking points, there's a few fights to be made afterwards. And that's probably what's going to happen with the card next week that we're going to look forward to as well. I do got to say, though, they got to give the fucking Apex a rest. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the thing is, I think there's such a controversial thing. So many people in the high up, they're like, we love the Apex. And they like, but everyone else says no, like the fighters don't like it. It's a smaller cage. You don't get the atmosphere. You don't, like, I get it's convenient and I get you make a fuckload of money by being able to just house yourself. You don't need to move as well. But man, it's just at least build a bigger cage. Like that could be the difference, really, or just increase the capacity in some regard. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. Well, two things. One, they are increasing the capacity, and it looks like it's going to get to about 1,100 people capacity inside the Apex, which they'll continue to use for fight nights and also Dana White Contender Series. Whether that gives them the space to build a bigger cage, I don't know. But it really is this tension between, well, the fans hate it. It makes for a much worse product on television watching it at home. Mm. But they own the place. The production is already preset up and good to go. They don't need to travel, have costs of the expense of moving and putting their show on the road. And it's just super convenient for them. Dana White walks out of his office into the Apex. He's got his little balcony there with all his little serfs and slaves running around, making things comfortable for him. And a feudal lord looking over his kingdom. And I think it would be actually sick once that expansion is complete to go to an event where there's 1,000 people in a small space like that. Mm. The atmosphere would be really good. You get 1,000 jacked up fans and put them in that small space. That would be sick. So hopefully that will come through the TV as well.
Yeah, I think so. And like, if you think about it from Dana's perspective as well, he's like, what is a smaller cage going to do? The guys are going to be closer together. They're not going to be running away from each other. It's going to make for more bangers of fights as well. So even if we are looking at like a little bit of a washed out quality on some of these cards, as you say, he's like, well, this is going to force them to be in closer proximity to another man who's going to be wanting to punch your face in. So, you know, and yeah, like from him to come out from a business meeting every time they mention it, and he's got 17 pros for him and like a couple of cons, a couple of fighters prefer the bigger cage. It's like, really? Like, yeah. It's a no-brainer. He's not going to change it.
Until ESPN forces them out in their next deal and says, no, you need to up the production quality and go on the road or whatever it is, they're just going to keep doing it because they have a quota to meet of events that they've agreed with ESPN to put on. So that's the way it's going to be. But why stop there? If it's all about, you know, having a smaller cage and increasing fights, fuck it. Let's bring in the Russian phone booth fights into the UFC. We're there with Power Slap, maybe some car jitsu. Let's just get Dana White buying all of these obscene different fighting events that you see typically coming out of Russia or Poland or, you know, other places where, let's say, health and safety isn't exactly at the forefront of people's minds and concussions are more of a way of life.
Yeah, exactly. When the main diet is either potatoes or a liquefied potato being like moonshine and vodka, and then you're also strangling someone with a car seatbelt, not only for your sport, but you do that in general life anyway. There's just like, it just sort of seems like a natural pattern there, doesn't it?
Strangling someone with a seatbelt is just how you get to the market on Tuesday mornings.
We call it this Siberian Tuesday morning breakfast routine.
All right, let's talk about these fights. Main event, Bobby King Green came out, unranked, came out. Grant Dawson was putting a bit of a run together, man. I think he was ranked 10 in the division before this, and people were going, ooh, Grant Dawson, he does this, he does that. I just want to pull up his record because
I thought it was like 10, almost 10 straight, wasn't it?
He peeled off a lot of wins together. Before that, I mean,
a couple of draws, but
he got one draw against Ricky Glenn. I actually don't remember what happened in that fight at all. I'm just gonna be straight up with that one. But his win over Demir Ismagulov is by far the biggest and most impressive win that he had. And he was on a bit that gave him some hype, and then he comes in and gets fucking flatlined by Bobby Green. And as Bobby Green said, man, he quit. He didn't look like he wanted to be in a fight. There was no like intention from Grant Dawson to get up from that. So I don't know whether it was just, you know, it was just he didn't see it coming and they're the ones that put you out or what happened. But got to give Bobby Green credit, man. He's a massive underdog going in. And to get that fight stopped in like inside 33 seconds against a number 10 ranked guy in the world, very impressive.
Super impressive. I reckon he just got knocked the fuck out. I think that's exactly what happened. You know, it's like people can say you quit, but when you get punched by a professional fighter who is that slick, you don't see them come in his punches as well because he's so unorthodox with his style.
Yeah.
It's a little bit wacky. So maybe just in sparring, if you can't replicate someone's style and you're only getting punched from a certain direction and that's how you're conditioning yourself, maybe there's a part on the chin that he's just found that just takes people's souls. What is interesting, though, is that Bobby's got a loss to Drew Dober, who had a fucking awesome win on this card as well. So I don't know how the matchups line up if there's, if Bobby's still looking to tear off another a win to get him 3 wins in a row or something, who he's going to be fighting next.
Well, that's actually a phenomenal shout because Bobby Green said he wants to fight again. He's getting nowhere near a title shot, let's be real. Yeah. But he got knocked out by Drew Dober. Drew Dober also got a knockout win on this card, as you said, and now has the most knockouts in lightweight history, which is just absolutely bonkers, but so cool. I love Drew Dober. He just seems like a chill dude as well. Like you just kick back, watch some fights, and sink a few beers with Drew Dober, and it will be a good time. I've got no doubt about it. There's a few options floating around.
You can also use his chin to open your beers for you as well.
exactly. So there's a few options for Bobby Green, who now moves up to 13th in the world rankings. He's been done dirty by the rankings there, because Grant Dawson was ranked 10th. He's dropped to 15th, and they just went, okay, Bobby, you can go to 13th. And you've got Jalen Turner above him, who just got the shit beat out of him by Dan Hooker. Rafael Dos Anjos, who doesn't even compete in this frigging weight class anymore. I feel a bit for Bobby. It's not like the rankings have any big impact or effect. So it's not the end of the world. But that would have been his highest career ranking by far. And for him to be able to say, I got to top 10 in the world in one of the toughest divisions, that's really cool to be able to you know, to say I achieved that. Because we know he's not going to win title. That's just the way it's going to go. He's just too old. But he's having this little resurgence at the back end of his career. I think that's three wins. Is it three wins this year? He had the headbutt knockout, the headbutt knockout of Jared Gordon, which you just know, the way that Sean O'Malley pretends he's undefeated, you know Bobby Green on his record counts that as a win. He's like, in the hood, we use everything. And I'll knock you out. I'm knocking out my head if I want. But he said he wants to get back in there in December. Drew Dober's just come and said he wants to get back in there in December.
That's the fight to
That is the fight to make.
Well, Drew Dober's got a win over Jared Gordon as well, right? So, well, I mean, not that Bobby's got one, but, you know, they seem to be fighting around the same people right now as well. Drew Dober says he wants to fight as much as possible before it's all done. Bobby Green wants to fight as much as possible before it's all done. But, yeah, man, it literally only makes sense for me right now. I mean, like, Dan Hooker's got a fight lined up already, right? So you wouldn't want to piece him against that. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what do you do with Bobby Green? He talks so much, and like, this is something that kind of bothers me a little bit. It's like when you change your name to King and you spout off all this stuff, and you're like, you're in the interviews, you're dressed in all your bling and stuff like that, and you're really like, you know, you're really playing up this I'm the man shit. And then when it comes to the time where you need to call your shot, he's like, I don't call shots, man. The UFC just gives me who they want to get. No, that's the fucking time to say, I want this guy. I want the money. I want this. And you deserve, you got a 33-second fucking knockout, son. Use your time. And
you've got a lot of time in that post-fight interview. You should be prepared. And for someone who is like all over it in terms of publicizing himself and being that larger-than-life character, that's a real, I guess, aberration from what's going on. But honestly, man, I don't actually think I've seen anyone say that anywhere. And I guess you go, well, because they've already fought. But Drew Dober definitely wants to get into the rankings. He's right there. Matt Frivola, who just beat him, is 14. Bobby Green, he's going to be fighting Benoit Saint-Denis, which, by the way, as we've talked about, Benoit Saint-Denis is the absolute god of war, king of violence, scariest son of a bitch on the roster. Matt Frivola doesn't take any prisoners either. Those dudes are going to go into the middle of the cage, throw down at MSG. It's on Veterans Day. Matt Frivola served in the army. Benoit Saint-Denis was French Special Forces. Those two dudes are going to go in and punch each other's lights out for our entertainment, and it's going to be sick. And honestly, I can't wait. But Bobby Green versus Drew Dober, get that on the undercard of UFC 295, the final pay-per-view of the year. Because you know who's fighting on that pay-per-view event, baby? We got Paddy Pimblett versus Tony Ferguson. The winner calls out the winner of Tony Ferguson. You know, if it's Paddy Pimblett, right? Bobby Green has got a win over Tony Ferguson. If Bobby Green and Drew Dober fight, the winner fights Paddy the Baddie, assuming he gets that done. And both of those, the winner of that fight will be ranked. So that gets Paddy the Baddie into the rankings, into a ranked fight. So let's see where he stands up against. And both of those guys are a name. You can sell Drew Dober as having the most knockouts in the division. You can sell Bobby Green as this personality, this veteran, a ranked fighter. He's going to talk the talk and promote the fight with Paddy. Mm-hmm. So let's do it. Drew Dober versus Bobby Green. Winner fights Paddy the Baddie next. I think that is the way to go.
I like it. I like that timeline. It's a sexy timeline. I'm all in for it, man. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, for the Veterans Day thing. I didn't realize that's on Veterans Day, so it's nice that they're getting CTE mixed with a PTSD, huh? So we'll have the whole alphabet soon.
Grant Dawson confirmed fraud, so he in now my books is now is known as Grant Fraudson. Grant Fraudson.
Oh no, I don't think so, man. I think he just got knocked the fuck out. I think it wasn't his night. I reckon, you know, how many wins has he peeled off? And like, you know, he's winning in decisive fashion. It was just his chance to show up, and he just got knocked the fuck out. I think
the lights were too bright. Fraud.
There he goes, and he's out, and he's out. But you know who didn't crumble under the pressure? Mr. Joe Pfeiffer. That was fucking, that was insane. This guy
very
is
impressive.
So fucking talented. He's so tough. He absorbed so many calf kicks. It was very, very, but it, like just the way that he mixed up his strikes, the way that he, what he pulled into like a Von Flue choke into an arm triangle. Like he, so he's like showing off such good, like mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, choking him out. Was it
big
round
fan? Two? Big, yeah. Yeah. Big fan of Joe Pfeiffer. He's obviously got a great story. This was his third win inside the UFC now. Mm-hmm. Four, if you include the Contender Series. He's going to be getting a new contract, or you know, contract discussions are coming. Dana White obviously likes the kid, so hopefully Joe Pfeiffer can start making some good money. Abdul Razak Al-Hazan is not a well-rounded mixed martial artist, but he's a terrifying son of a bitch. And if he lands on you and connects clean, you are going to sleep. He's a scary proposition, but I think everyone could tell he truly belongs at welterweight, not middleweight. If you look at the size of Joe Pfeiffer versus him, he needs to stop lifting weights.
Yes.
He needs to get off the gas, and he needs to go down to welterweight if he wants to extend or prolong his career. Kid's 38 years old now. He's not long for the sport at the highest level. And to be honest, his record doesn't you know, paint him in the best picture. So he's 1-1, he goes 4-1, then he goes to 4-4, 5-5. He's 6-6. So he's pedestrian, middle of the road, a 500 fighter inside the UFC. I don't know what his contract's going to be looking like, but it's a good
shout. When you see these two guys, like you look at that fight, just like even if you didn't know anything about the sport, you're like, that guy's much fucking bigger than the other guy. That's not fair. Like, and it really is. It was such a huge difference. But you see, like even Joaquin Buckley, good example of dropping the weight, being able to get on a fucking same guy on the card. So like, I mean, it's a good example that you're having success if you just stop doing the glamorizing of the muscles, stop bodybuilding and just become a mixed martial artist and, you know, learn to stop eating burritos. You know, it's like, it's a hard thing to do, I guess. It's probably one of the hardest things to do is that discipline. But if it's going to make
you're a damn professional, like be a professional and get down to your optimal weight class. Cause he's a short dude. He's like 5'9" or 5'10", which, you know, you
for
should not
for a middleweight. That's
exactly. It's really small. As you said, his former opponent, Joaquin Buckley, has already got out in front of this, and he's moved down to middleweight, to welterweight from middleweight, and he's looked as good as ever. He murked Fialo, and then on this card, he put in a very good performance against Alex Morono, who is no joke. Alex Morono is not a scrub by any stretch of the imagination, and Joaquin Buckley put in a very good lopsided decision, and I believe he got a couple of 10-8 rounds in there, at least one 10-8 round in there. So, yeah, man, really, really very impressive performance from Joaquin Buckley. Abdul Razak Al-Hazan needs to look at that and go, I should follow him. I'll follow him back down to welterweight. Maybe we can fight again at some point, but he needs to get a couple of wins under his belt, and he needs to do that at welterweight.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just be middling at this, like this point of your career, can you? You can't just be 1-1, 1-1. Because in this, there are some divisions that are more stacked than others. But let's just say that there's going to be someone that's going to take your place. There's going to be other fighters out there that want it. There's a lot of people that are coming through the sport, even in recent years, you know, who are hugely talented. Just look at the Dana White Contender Series, and you're just seeing these fucking animals come through, and you're like, well, someone's going to take your seat, son.
Animals, and they're getting paid like $5,000 to fight. So they're young and they're hungry. And Dana White's like, I'm also putting you in the apex. And you're going to go fight for $10,000 a fight. Young dudes are coming through. And Al-Hazan is the perfect kind of name that someone coming off the Contender Series, they're going to go, he just lost his last fight. He's a name. Let's go and see what you're made of. Are you ready for the UFC? And he's going to come up against some absolute monster from fucking Dagestan or Georgia in the middleweight division and get absolutely bonked. So get yourself down to welterweight and, you know, see what you can do. Put a couple of wins together. try and get a couple of performance of the night bonuses. And really what he should be doing now is just trying to make as much money as he can and putting that money aside for his retirement, because he can't have long left at 38 years old.
No, surely, man, surely. It's yeah, it's just gotta have to happen. But like, I mean, but let's use this chance to switch to our boy Buckley, huh? I mean, he's showing tremendous cardio, which has never been a thing for him.
Yeah.
So it's just a good example of what happens when you drop friggin' 10 pounds of muscle, you know, like or whatever he's done.
It's twofold.
That on him.
No, it's twofold, right? He obviously carrying more muscle requires more oxygen and more cardiovascular output to do your movements. But second of all, he's got to do more cardio in camp to be able to get down the weight, to burn off the fat. And so it's twofold. He has a bigger dedication to cardio, and then when he gets in there, he has less muscle using up his energy as well. So yeah, man, just credit to him for looking as good as he ever has at Worlds, as good as he ever has, and by doing that at welterweight as well. Really, yeah. Really impressive.
100%, man. Yeah, I'm happy for it. Like, I guess we come to expect, like, you know, tremendous knockouts with it from Joaquin Buckley. So I think there's something that maybe I've been predispositioned to expect after, you know, every single time you see Joaquin Buckley on a card, it comes back to that highlight taekwondo spinning back kick off the guy's fist knockout, like spectacular, and that's going to follow the rest of his career. You know, one of the greatest knockouts, you know, probably of all time. When we don't see it and it comes to a decision win, sure, like, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I expected more.
I feel like I've been cheated.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just because they're blue-balling me a little bit, you know?
Yeah. They're showing you that highlight over and over, and then you don't get another one.
Yeah, we're just getting started. But, but otherwise, it's good to see him in the win column. He seems like a nice guy. But you know, he what did he do in his post fight? Did he call anyone out, or was he? I got no idea, bro.
As soon as I didn't watch it live, so was not checking in the post fight interview.
Here we are. This is the quality you deserve. All the fans out there.
Bro, I actually tweeted out about you're lucky. I actually watched any of these fights, because the watching Apex events on replay is such a chore, man, because there's no atmosphere and you're just like, oh, it feels like a chore. And I love watching fights, but watching Apex events on replay is really, really difficult. And if I don't watch an event live and there's a crowd, I do not do any social media. I do not check my phone at all. And I go in not knowing anything. If it's an Apex card, I look at what the hell happened and see what fights are maybe worth checking out. And I do jump on Twitter because, you know, there are some fights where I'm sorry, I'm not going to sit and watch a decision between, oh, I actually did watch this fight live, but let's just say, for example, JJ Aldrich, the palest woman on the planet. She makes you look like a swarthy Mediterranean. You could see a fucking heart beating out there versus Montana De La Rosa. Like, I'm not going to watch that fight on replay. It was a struggle enough to watch it live. And I'm glad I had Octagon MMA to keep me company. And I'm not going to watch Vanessa Demopoulos against Kanako Murata on replay. I'm just not going to do it. No,
it's hard. It's hard to get there. Yeah. I mean, especially when because you've now preset yourself the idea that that's what's exciting about the UFC. The UFC is exciting because you don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Anything can happen. So it keeps you on tenterhooks, on bated breath. And when you know the results, it's tragic. When a big fight gets spoiled for you, it's one of the most deflating things.
Oh man, I've had to remove people from my social media after they've ruined the fight for me before. I'm like, nope, yeah, you're now out of my life. I can't have this negativity in my life.
I've had to remove you from my friendship group. I will never speak to you again.
But, you know, it's my fault for being in the wrong time zone. It's like, oh, okay, so, you know, sometimes the friggin' preliminary card doesn't start until 2 a.m.
The only way to do it is to just not look at your phone. And I know it's like an awful fucking 21st century habit that you wake up and the first thing you do is melt your brain as it's adjusting for the day with memes and social media. But just keep that shit face down on the side on your bedside table and don't just get up and go and put the fight on. Don't look at it. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I have that issue. So obviously, because I'm like, I want to wake up, and first thing I do is I check my emails. So I'm like, all right, check my emails, make sure there's no like work coming up, you know, any jobs to do, anything that I've missed. And first thing I'm like, all right, I figured that out. And
any single women in your area?
It's a reaction. It's just like I respond to a message or something. Plenty in Budapest now. It's like a natural reaction just to go to Instagram, to go to Facebook or something like that. And the first thing that comes up, because the algorithm knows that I'm fucking excited about the fight, it knows that we've been chatting about it, that we're excited. The gods of Google are listening to us always. And the first thing that comes up is win by knockout. And you're like, fuck, man. Oh, I shouldn't have touched it.
You got to. I actually once you know we're going to be moving house soon, and we're just going to get an old school alarm clock, and phones are going to be like out of reach, plugged in away at nighttime. So the first reflex that I have in the morning is not just to wake up and go, oh, let's have a look at my phone and see what's. So I don't need it for an alarm clock. I don't have an excuse. It's just going to be old school digital alarm clock that maybe I'll set it up to play the Groundhog Day. Isn't it? I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher. I think is the wake up radio song for Groundhog Day. Fuck, that's a classic movie. I got to watch that.
It is good. Yeah, Bill Murray. Fucking
Bill Murray, baby. Right. Any other fights you want to really talk about? Okay, I mean, Drew Dober. I mean, what is Ricky Glenn doing? What was that like? Come on.
No,
You can't stand in front of Drew Dober and go, hit me.
That power that Drew's got is nuts, and obviously he's like the threat of the wrestling, because he's a very good
wrestler.
And what happens, I think, with a lot of these wrestlers is because they're so explosive, you end up with this Mike Chandler style where you end up just having these huge power shots. But when people can actually like tighten up that striking, so they're not just like huge looping overhands and like, you know, sure, there's success in that, but it's limited. But if you can clean up the striking and still have that explosivity, which it sort of seems Drew Dober's done, it's fucking sick. It's cool to watch. You know, you're not just standing flat-footed. You're always pressing your advantage, and when you're pressing and you're able to deliver that power, and you're threatening the takedown, and you're threatening, you know, it's exhausting fighting them, and then you're just going to get knocked the fuck out because you're exhausted. So it seems like a winning combination for him.
Exactly. And he bagged 50k for his efforts. You just love to see it. Good by life. The way, he doesn't have a nickname. I remember CB Dolloway was the Doberman. How is Drew? Dober, not Drew Dober Doberman, or like, how is he not using that vicious, beautiful, violent dog as his fight nickname? He's missing a trick there.
And it's not Iron Chin. It's not something like you know. I'm sure if we sat here, we
Drew the Chin Dober,
Stan Smith. Let's go.
Yeah,
Alexander Hernandez. I feel bad for him a little bit. It just sort of seems like he's just a little bit out of. He just doesn't get there. When he first started coming on the scene and started having success, I was really excited and I really wanted to keep watching him. And then it just sort of seemed like he just fizzles, like one in, one out, and then he loses a couple. Yeah. And yeah, it's a bit of a shame because he's a fucking physical specimen. You can tell he works hard. It's just he just doesn't.
You can tell he's doing all of the HGH with that gut that he had at weigh-in. Oh my goodness!
Fucking
his
hell!
Distended belly. Anyway, but yeah, man, he just doesn't have what it takes. He's just gonna never gonna break into the rankings, and he's always just gonna ultimately he'll become you've won in the contender series. Go and fight Alexander Hernandez and see what happens. That's basically what he's destined to be.
I was really happy with Carolina Corpus.
I was just about to say,
my girl, I love
your
her.
Girl. She lost five in a row and was like, just hang it up, Carolina. Mm. Whatever she's done, whatever doctor and pharmacist she's gone to see has really helped her career, because she's she is now peeled off four wins in a row. And she's looked really, really good. And okay, they aren't necessarily the top of the division. And when she went on her skid, she was fighting some of the best. I mean, she's got losses to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Jessica Andrade, Alexa Grasso, Yan Zhao Nan. So, and then
literally the top of the heap, every single one.
So I'm a big fan of Carolina. It's nice to see her get back on track. You wonder at age 37, turning 38, how long she's got left in the sport, but I hope the UFC gets back to Poland soon and she can be one of the, she can be one of like the co-main events, in that. So yeah,
so many good fighters from Poland that are on the roster and have been on the roster for a long time, you know, and they're always
UFC could do a stadium in Poland, man.
Oh, for sure. Like it just, and I don't know what it is, but like it just sort of seems like a lot. They just have grit and like they're tough as fuck. That just sort of seems like the reoccurring theme over all these fighters.
100%.
Yeah, man. So, but I mean, just her emotional thing at the end afterwards, you know, and it was so pure and nice, and you can tell it's just coming from such a nice place. It's really nice to see that, you know, like these tough people that go out there, put their hearts, their fists, their bodies on the line, and then when you see them like break down and like they're inside and they're people, and it's like and it, how much it affects them and how much it means to them. Yeah. It's really nice to see, man. So, yeah, it was really, really cool. So I'm happy for her.
Definitely, definitely. By the way, I know you got a soft spot in your heart for Carolina, but I know your number one true girl is Miss Baby Shark. But you must be devastated, bro. She's off the market. She's taken.
Oh well, one day.
But the good news is she's dating a pale Celtic boy, so you know you could be her type.
I'm not too far removed. All I have to do is earn money, become 6 foot, become attractive, and
he's short. He's a little boy. All you have to do is become a professional boxer. But you could be in there. So let's pull up. Right. Let's do it easy.
Just on the back end of my career, two knee surgeries, I'll become a professional boxer. Easy. Like, what's that? Like, just 20 years of training or something? Yeah, easy. It'll be fine.
Connor Walsh. I think it's Connor Walsh. Is it Connor Walsh Boxing? Is that his name? No, it's not Connor Walsh. I don't know.
He's got a bland name too.
Yeah.
Well, no, anyway. Nothing to write. I'll just wait him out. I'll wait on the sidelines.
Wait for his inevitable downfall as he gets knocked out and can't spell Tabitha Ritchie anymore.
Yeah, we. You know what's funny? You know how Vanessa Demopoulos always does the thing where she hops into the people's arms, and
bro, it pisses me off to no end.
Daniel Cormier was like, "I do not want to do that."
I thought he was gonna pile driver a bomber, just like smash her head through the canvas. I was like, DC was just thinking his wife is just blowing up his phone right now, being like, "You better put that hoe down."
Yeah, man, and like you could probably tell, like you know, it, like it was like the time with Bisping, the time with Rogan, and stuff like that. And they're like, ha ha ha, you know, they're like still lifting, but he lifted with one arm, the one that she jumped in, and he was like barely holding on. She was holding on. So yeah, it was just kind of funny. And you got the signature thing, but
I didn't watch the fight, but I saw all of the discourse after the fight, and she was apparently very lucky to win with the she just basically spent the fight on her back. Giggity.
Well, that I think she was the other girl wasn't effective from the top. It's kind of
right,
like
how
that played out. It was like, you know, sure, you're on your back, but if you're being effective at striking everywhere else, all you're just doing is maintaining a position. It's like I wouldn't have the stats in front of me, but like I didn't see too many like ground and pound strikes that were effective at all.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. She's you know, she's 4-2 in the UFC, but again, she's just turned 35 years old. She hasn't got a long road ahead of her inside the UFC. So, you know, she's making herself a bit of a personality. She's essentially building herself up to become an Instagram famous person post fighting. Yeah. That's all she's doing. And smart, man. She's using the platform that UFC gives her.
100%, and you know she's got videos of training like with Nina Drama as well, and she's got a huge following, so
yeah.
That's only going to be increasing. So if you're a good looking woman and you're winning fights, and you know, and you've got a signature, yeah, she's doing it all right. She's doing the system that she's that she's working with is going all right, but you know who's not doing any of that? JJ Aldridge punched the fuck out of Montana De La Rosa. She was pissing blood out of her mouth. So I mean, like, it was kind of nice to watch that, but at the same time, I'm watching this, and I was watching this with someone who had never watched UFC before, and they're like, "Oh my god, this is so violent! They're so amazing!" And I'm like, "I mean, if you're talking about like skill sets, if you're talking about like quality fights, this is the first one I've ever shown you that you have no like you have no sense of perspective." And I was trying to explain, it's like literally, if you look at the one division and the quality of female fighters in those, the Muay Thai, the mixed kickboxing, the even the mixed martial arts,
they'd run through them.
Monsters. Every single, like, it would make every single other woman on the UFC roster, bar like maybe the top three, top four, look like absolute dog shit. Look like first day on the mat. And yeah, so I mean, just watching, it just doesn't seem like it's. It's just not up there with the top quality of stuff. But you know, they're not ranked to my understanding. So I mean, maybe it is what it is. But it just seems to be it seems to be a division of decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much, man. Pretty much. That's kind of the way it goes. All right. I don't think there's anything else really to talk about on this card. So let's look ahead.
Yeah, boy.
Because there's a few decent knocks. There's a few decent knocks on this card coming up. Headlined by Sadiq Youssef versus Edson Barboza, you know, sort of younger guy in the division. Let's see where he's ranked. He's ranked 11th. Edson Barboza's ranked 13th. This is is Barboza just going to stay a gatekeeper? Has he got a bit of a run left in him? I'm going to say probably Sadiq Youssef's able to get this done. He's a cardio monster. Edson Barboza's cardio is questionable, but yeah.
I mean, they're both physical specimens, you know, and it's just, but I mean, like, that's what happens when you get down to featherweight. I mean, I have no idea how Edson Barboza gets down to featherweight. I mean, he was ripped in the weight division above, so it's astounding. But yeah, Sadiq Youssef. Yeah, I don't know. I reckon it's going to be a banger. Like, the thing is with Edson Barboza, because when you get these highlight reel knockouts, and yet again we have this expectation, there's always that chance that he's going to do something fucking incredible, and that's what they're kind of like banking on, because they can, when they sell a pay per view when they sell a fight night like this, the people are going to come to watch what's on the main event. They're going to build the whole edit around it. And what does Edson Barboza have? A series of fucking terrifying, you know, his foot destroying other people's fucking necks. So it's,
And he's coming off a very, very good win over Billy Quorum Chill. Absolutely sent him into the shadow realm with that knee. Superb stuff, man. So
it is superb. We love Billy Q, but goddamn, dude, it's hard to deal with anything from the lower body of Edson Barboza. Giggity.
Can't believe they've put Jennifer Meyer against Vivi Araujo as the co-main event when you've got Jonathan Martinez versus Adrian Yanez just sitting there looking at you deliciously. But UFC is going to UFC with their bout ordering from time to time.
They're higher in the rankings and they're.
I don't care. I've got nothing. Like, who? Like, come on, man. Like, I just can't. I can't do it with these like meaningless. Like, you just look at them, Jennifer Meyer and Vivi Araujo. Look at them. They are so far away from the top of the division of the champions. It's like stop kidding yourselves. And Jennifer Meyer is just turned 35 years old. Vivian Araujo is about to turn 37 years old. Like, what are we doing here? Let's put Bill Adrian Yanez is top 15 bantamweight. Jonathan Martinez is top 15 bantamweight. Like, both exciting younger dudes. Martinez coming off, you know, a good win over Cub Swanson. Let's put these two up there and build some hype around them. But anyway, that's going to be a good fight. You should enjoy that fight.
Oh, I'm keen for the Yanez Martinez fight. Oh, I'm really keen for the Michelle Pereira fight versus Andre Petrovsky. So that is fucking wild, because Andre's just come in to this off of the Ultimate Fighter, right? And he's just been basically just getting better and better and better.
He was so
one-dimensional when he started. You think about Pooh Bear as well. We were talking the last time about it. Like, you know, someone who's actually come from the Ultimate Fighter and has incrementally improved in terms of his skill sets. I mean, he used to just be a really good wrestler who would just throw really wild punches and just get tired and whatever. But the fact that he's going up against a fucking terrifying human in Michel Pereira, that's going to be a banger of a fight. I reckon this is going to be a fucking war, honestly.
Yeah, dude. And it's a real styles make fight. If Petroski can get this to the ground, he wins the fight. If Pereira can keep it standing, he probably wins the fight. But Petroski's threat of the wrestling might rein in some of Michel Pereira's crazy psycho techniques and may bring some more parity to the stand-up game. You just don't know. This is a really interesting fight. Got a flyweight battle between Edgar Chaires and Daniel Lacerda, which will be a really, really fun fight down at flyweight. But the fight that I've got my eyes on is Cameron Simon versus Christian Rodriguez in the bantamweight division to open up the main card. Cameron Simon undefeated, obviously the training partner of Dricus Duplessis. Big reputation, big expectations for him, and he hasn't put a foot wrong inside the UFC. Christian Rodriguez was given Raul Rosas Jr. came in and sort of made him look like the young kid that he is. Mm-hmm. Very impressive.
Yeah.
Not yeah, mental, though. Cameron Simon, for me, should be the clear favorite in this fight, and he's the betting underdog. So really? I'm going to be laying some cheddar on Cameron Simon on this one.
Well, it's probably just because it's a looks thing. It, like, you know, if you're looking at the eye test, Cameron Simon looks like a fucking child. So it's like, I feel like that could play into it. Like, despite the fact that he's like 9-0, people are just going to, like you look at, what's his name? Like Sean O'Malley back in the day, he looks like a skinny young kid, but he's knocking the fuck out of people. Yeah, you look at who's that guy that whiz on the ground? He's
Chase Hooper.
Chase Hooper, you know, like he's a monster. Maybe he's not had the recent like he's been a bit back and forth in recent fights, but otherwise, like when he was coming up, he was fucking devastating. Like and such a surprise to see that.
Yeah, so, it's crazy to see your autistic tax accountant also hammering away inside the UFC.
Exactly, man.
It's just don't expect it.
Well, I think this is something to consider then, isn't it? It's like, you know, if you're putting bets on that are like, that are intelligent, that's an intelligent bet to take because it's like, obviously, the majority
of people only make intelligent bets, Jamie. I only make intelligent bets.
But it's more, instead of going off, like, you know, what everyone else is doing a tiny bit of your own research. I mean, like, obviously anything can happen, but what can you do? You can make an informed decision. And if the majority of people are just looking at the eye test and just seeing this on face value, it's a great way, especially if you get in early, to get a good fucking solid bet in. If he's a betting under, I'm betting on it.
I can't wait to come back next week and Cameron Simon has been laid the fuck out.
Well, look, that's the thing. All you're doing is increasing your percentage by nothing, really. But it's like, it's an informed decision, at least. You're not just, it's not uninformed. So you can't feel as bad afterwards. Maybe that's the trick.
Yeah, you can just lie to yourself. There's actually a few good bantamweight fights on this card. You got Yanez and Martinez. You got Chris Gutierrez fighting down there. Honestly, I don't even know who Alateng Haley is. But he's had like a load of fights inside the UFC, and I don't remember ever watching him fight. That's probably on me. Oh, the Mongolian Knight, wicked.
Like the last guy on this card, another Mongolian. How many Mongolian fighters are there actually? Because I mean, like, this guy just
three or
won
four.
The last
Archie Long, he's a beast. I like him. Like his little hat as well.
Yeah, super cute. <Love it. laughs> I'm always keen to see Darren the Damage Elkins, man. He's such a fucking psychopath. Like, you know, you look at like Nate Landwehr, you look at bloody like Diego Sanchez back in the day. Man, there are just some wild motherfuckers, just some people that do not care about CTE, that do not, you know, regard their health as a priority, but they put on fucking insane fights. And if you're gonna put a bet on, put a bet on that this guy is going to be pissing from his face at like a waterfall of blood, regardless of if he wins or not. If that's a betting slip, I'm on it 100%. This man has scar tissue that is just like, it's just, I think that's the majority of his face, actually. There's no real skin left.
No, he is made of 100% scar tissue these days. He's fighting TJ Brown, who's coming off a loss to Bill Algeo. Bill Algeo obviously looked very good in his previous fight. I don't know, man. I'm probably not going to bet on Darren Elkins to win a fight, but you can guarantee, and there's a reason why this is the feature bout on the prelims. Darren Elkins doesn't lose fights. He just runs out of time. He's hard to kill. You need to kill this man with a hammer. And even then, I'm doubtful that you'd be able to. He's an absolute savage. And he gets better. He gets better and better as the fight goes on. He's just a fun dude. And I'm sure he gets taken care of by the UFC. He's only ever had 3 performances of the night, which is wild. And like, the fact that he's never been in a fight of the night is just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
But I think that's what happens, right? He gets in the war aspect, but you're right. It's like when you run out of time, it's like it doesn't seem like closing out the show is the main ability, right? It's like, if you're a great wrestler, you look like Clay Guida and stuff like that. They when you get tired, that's what you get back to. And if it's just wrestling isn't like pulling submissions and stuff like that. It's just it's wearing on your opponent's positional mainly. Like, you know, it's exhausting. So it doesn't really. Yeah, it ends up sort of whiffing out. So that's probably why there's not as many like fight of the nights, like explosive.
Yeah, that's probably right.
We've got Terrence McKinney on this card as well.
Yeah, dude, he was supposed to be fighting Chris Duncan, which was going to be an absolute bomb burner. But unfortunately, Chris Duncan had visa issues. He couldn't get a visa to work in the US for this time around. And so he's fighting some newcomer, Brendan Marotte, who, you know, he's probably a poor dude who's going to get murked by Terrence McKinney and get him back on track, because T-Rex is, you know, he's okay. He's got a win recently, but he got flatlined by Drew Dober, got a win, got beaten twice by Ishmael and then Nazim Sadikov. He needs to start peeling off some wins together. And he's got that 7-second win over Matt Frivola, and that's going to be one that Matt Frivola wants to get back. If Terrence McKinney can keep himself relevant and winning in this division, Frivola's ranked. If Frivola loses to Benoit Saint-Denis, that could be a great fight to run back. Frivola versus McKinney. If McKinney gets a fast win here and then maybe one more, be interesting to see. But whatever happens, this fight isn't going the distance. Terrence McKinney fights do not go the distance. Let's pull up his record here. Mixed martial arts. So win or lose, finish. He's literally never gone to decision. Every single one of his fights is kill or be killed. So, you know, you can bet on this one in confidence that someone's getting finished.
Yeah, for sure. And so the other guy hasn't actually fought in the UFC yet, is it? Was he a contender series guy, or is he just?
Let's have a look here. Pulling up the Sherdog
Combat article. Zone. What's Combat Zone? Must be he's number 4 lightweight in North.
Oh, he's owned by Calvin Kattar. That's his. Okay, he trains with Calvin Kattar, coming out of Boston. Means he's going to probably be an exciting, scrappy dude.
Fucking hands.
Yeah,
I love Calvin Kattar, man. I love Calvin Kattar.
Dude, me too. He's one of my favorite fighters. I hope we see him again soon.
Yeah, me too, man.
All right. Probably not much else to talk about on this card. We'll do it. We'll have a big UFC 294 preview coming your way.
Oh yeah, dude.
One last piece of thing we got to talk about is it finally seems that Conor McGregor is back in the USADA testing pool, and that puts him on track for UFC 300, which is like, of course, Conor McGregor was going to headline UFC 300.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's if everything gets put together, right? So, like, when there's a difference between I've just submitted my stuff, was his wording, that to the audience, to us, that seems like he submitted some urine. That seems like he submitted some blood. Dana White says he submitted his forms.
Yeah, can you imagine, though, Conor McGregor just sent Jeff Nowitzki a bag of piss to the UFC PI? Like, he's like, you deal with it. Tell you started to come find me, but like, here's my bag of piss. Let's get me going.
Yeah, this just smells like proper 12 whiskey, Conor. Are you like, what? Are you just marketing to me? Is this blackmail?
This just smells like a combination of forged stout and proper 12 whiskey. And cocaine. Who'd have thought?
Who would have thought? Who would have fucking thought? Look, I feel like he, I mean, like if that is the case, if it's UFC 300, that will be one of the biggest fucking events. I know we say this every time because, like, you know, every time that Conor McGregor has an event, it's one of the biggest events that has ever happened. It's just, it happens time and time again. But we've had such a long way since the last one. And I feel like Conor McGregor was at this point in time where obviously he escalated the sport, but it was a time when he was getting successful for a lot of new people to come into watching UFC. It was starting to get onto the understanding of into the community, into the environment. So I feel like this has a good mix of old school UFC fans like yourself and the new school and the people that are just coming in and learning to understand it at its prime, right?
Dude, this is it. UFC's never been bigger. The return of Conor McGregor will be able to be packaged up as something unbelievable. Tie that in with the promotional leverage they're going to have for UFC 300 and everything else they've been able to do for 100 and 200. This is going to be, it's going to be outrageous. I'd be surprised if they go a different way. The only thing that you could point to and they could say, well, UFC 300 is going to be big no matter what. Let's save the Conor McGregor bullet for another pay-per-view because that will be massive, and it's also not going to be a title fight against Michael Chandler. And so that's one they can keep up their sleeve where they don't have to put a title fight on a pay-per-view because it's Conor McGregor.
Yeah, you know, you're right, because it's, I mean, if we're talking money, and the purpose of most businesses is to make fucking money, so that's actually a really good shout. Like, it sort of seems like as much as that would draw people, it's already got a draw. Everyone's going to watch that fight anyway. Everyone's going to buy that anyway. Why would you not sell a fucking million pay-per-view buys? In fact, what is the biggest pay-per-view
of all time?
Yeah, of all time.
Conor versus Khabib.
Still.
Yeah. That's for box for MMA, for boxing.
For MMA,
It's Floyd versus Floyd Pacquiao.
Fight, Pacquiao. Yeah, man. Look, I think him versus Chandler, I think what I think needs to happen, though, Chandler's great on socials, and obviously because it was so hyped up and they've done the right thing, but because Conor's not done the right thing and pulled the fucking, you know, taken his fucking nose out of the bag, he's delayed this, and it seems like it's taken a lot of that excitement away from Chandler, like, you know, the expectation. It's like, it's not that we're forgetting about him. As soon as there's, like, you know, a good edit highlight reel put together, you know, in anticipation, we're all going to forget about this time. You know, it happens with John Jones. We all get really excited after a long time. But, like, in this in-between period where we don't know what's going on, it must be hard on Chandler to not want to just take another fight in the meantime. If he loses that fight, that's a fucking risky proposition.
Exactly. And it goes away. And with Chandler's fighting style, and the only thing is Chandler's made a shit ton of money from the UFC already, and he'll make a shit ton more. And he's just got to stay patient, and he will get this fight because it's the fight that makes the most sense.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like even when Drew Dober said, he's like, if he needs someone to keep him warm, I'm like, don't do that.
With Drew Dober. Drew Dober's got that kind of power and defensive wrestling ability that he if Chandler goes into the pocket with Drew Dober, he could get put to sleep.
Yeah, man, it's too dangerous to not. But it kind of sucks because, like, at what point do the fans, or like the people that are casuals or something, if there's a huge amount of demand and someone else gets it first, someone like Justin Gaethje, someone like who else has kind of been calling out? Is there ever a world where, because Chandler's not been the most active in this time, because he can't take a fight, someone else who is taking fights can slip in? Do you think that that's ever a possibility, or do you think Dana's just going to say, we're going to do right by you?
It's always a possibility, especially if Conor starts calling shots and gets something shiny dangled over here to draw his attention.
Yeah, Conor gets what Conor wants.
Conor gets what Conor wants. He will decide what the fight is. The question is, has Chandler annoyed him enough to and does he think that fight is winnable enough as well? Conor's going to be very selective about who he comes back to. And it's going to have to be a balance between a name that can satisfy and someone he can feasibly win the fight against. Chandler, and who will pull their weight promotionally. Chandler ticks all of those boxes.
Yeah, man, for sure, for sure. Like, I mean, in recent, the recent thing, someone talking about Tony Ferguson, right? But I mean, like, if you're giving him Pimblett, it's not the same skill set as Conor McGregor, and it's not the same star power. Maybe five fights ago before the seven fight skid, but like, I mean, that would get Conor McGregor a win at least. So like those, like they're only ticking a couple, like one box, maybe two boxes out of what you said, like the promotional aspect, the fact that it's sellable, the fact that Conor McGregor could feasibly win, like all these things need to come into play. And yeah, as you say, I think Chandler's the golden goose in this case.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. All right, man. Let's wrap it up. Get on out of here. Make sure if you haven't subscribed to the pod already, come back and listen to us. We're going to have a great UFC 294 preview coming your way, so you won't want to miss that. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. You can find us on YouTube as well. If you're just audio only, pop on over to our YouTube, give us a like and subscribe there, help support us out. And if you're on Apple, scroll down to the bottom of your feed, give us that 5-star rating. That really helps. Same as on Spotify. And yeah, give us a follow on socials at punchdrunkpod_ on Twitter, at punchdrunkpod on Instagram. You can find me at Lewis Glover MMA on both of those. You can find Jamie at Jamie Trezellian on the old Instagram. But yeah, man, give us a follow. Check us out. Enjoy our stuff. And yeah, we'll catch you next time.
See you next week, guys. Cheers.
Peace.